This is Central Time. Under federal law, it's illegal for anyone under 21 to buy tobacco and vaping products. A UW Survey Center project puts that to the test each year here in Wisconsin. They recruit young people to try to buy those products. This year, almost 1 in 7 underage buyers were successful when they shouldn't have been. That rate has doubled since 2019. Part of the problem may be that state law hasn't kept up with federal law. Our next guest is a Wisconsin expert on smoking cessation and the health impacts of tobacco and vaping products. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see a lot of young people using tobacco or vaping products in your community? Have you quit smoking or vaping at some point in your life? How did it go? Do you have questions about prevention in particular for young people? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Michael Fiore is a professor of medicine and the founder and director of the Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention at the University of Wisconsin. Dr. Fiore, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Let's talk about that survey I mentioned. We put this system to the test. Can people who under federal law shouldn't buy tobacco be able to buy it? What is your read on these latest numbers?
They're concerning. As you mentioned, 1 in 7 or about 13% of those kids were able to successfully purchase tobacco products. And here's an important thing to recognize. These are kids who go into a store. They don't lie about their age. They don't look like they're adults, but they just try to buy the products. And we know that if one kid in a neighborhood has access to cigarette products, the whole neighborhood has access to those products. And while many of them start by using e-cigarettes, in fact, most of them, many of them then progress on to smoke combustible or conventional cigarettes. So it's a big concern.
Can you talk about why we focus so much on that younger age group and prevention for people getting started in the first place?
Well, there's lots of reasons. First, it's illegal. And that people should not be buying or selling cigarettes to minors. Secondly, cigarettes are the only product in our society, legal product, that kills half of the people who use it if they become addicted and don't successfully quit. Think about that. Half of the people who smoke in our state are going to die from a disease directly caused by their smoking. The other concern is that the adolescent brain is susceptible to nicotine. If a kid starts using nicotine before the age of 18 or 19, she or he is much more likely to become a lifelong addict to nicotine products. So if we protect kids during their brain vulnerability period, we're able to protect them, hopefully, from lifelong addiction.
Dr. Fiore, my understanding of longer-term trends when it comes to young people and smoking was we had years of pretty positive news. The rates of teen smoking were going down and down and down. And then vaping came along, and it seems, in terms of nicotine addiction, to have reversed some of that good news. What have we seen big picture in the long run?
You described it very accurately. Over the last 20 years, we have made great progress in reducing youth cigarette purchases, but particularly youth cigarette smoking. It was about 8% back in 2014 of high school kids reporting that they used cigarettes. In 2022, it was down to 2%. So that is incredible progress. The problem is that many kids have instead begun purchasing and using vapes or e-cigarettes. And as of 2022, over 10% of high school kids were using e-cigarettes.
I understand part of the problem in Wisconsin may be differences in state law and federal law. Federal law, I mentioned, 21 is the minimum age for vaping and other smoking products. Wisconsin hasn't changed that as some other states have done. It's 18 here. Now, that means it's still illegal under federal law, but that may create a gap in law enforcement here in the state. How big a problem is that?
Yeah, I think it's a significant issue, and it frankly results in confusion. The federal law applies to Wisconsin, so I want to make that really clear. No one in our state should be able to buy a tobacco product if they're under the age of 21, pure and simple. But 40 states have made their state law consistent with the federal law, and Wisconsin has not yet done that. This results in some confusion, but that's not an excuse. Vendors, retailers are responsible for checking the IDs of people who want to buy tobacco products and ensuring that they are not minors.
Talking to Dr. Michael Fiore, professor of medicine and founder and director of the Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention at UW. He's talking with us about underage nicotine sales here in the state. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, what you're seeing in your community. Are you in high school? Do you see a lot of your classmates vaping or using other tobacco-related products? Do you work at the counter, or have you done that? Do you see yourself and your coworkers consistently asking for that proof of age? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about underage tobacco and vaping sales with Dr. Michael Fiore, professor of medicine, founder and director of the Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention at the University of Wisconsin. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Did you start using tobacco products as a kid? Did it set the stage for a long lifetime of smoking? What did it take to quit? If you are a young person yourself, or you work in schools or have kids, are you seeing a lot of vaping and smoking going on? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Fiore, as we've mentioned in this survey, 1 in 7 or so kids who went in to buy these products successfully did it. What is the key, you think, to making sure that vendors do card and don't sell to people who aren't supposed to have these products?
Well, what we've found is when vendors are called on this behavior, it really changes what goes on in those establishments. And there's a whole series of actions that can be taken, from warnings to fines. And it's important to know that if Wisconsin has a rate of selling at 20%. We're at 13% now. If 20% of the kids had succeeded, we would be at risk of losing almost $3 million in our state, federal funds that they would withheld because Wisconsin is selling cigarettes to minors.
Let's talk a little bit about smoking cessation. I know another issue you've worked on a lot. Remind people who maybe are thinking about quitting, maybe evaluating their health habits this time of year, what resources are available here in the state?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. So first, it's a great time to quit. And if you're thinking about it, just try. Even if you've tried in the past and have failed, do it. Most people require multiple times, and the more times you try, the more likely you are to succeed. So I want to just reinforce those desires of anyone. Secondly, we have free in the state of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Tobacco Quit Line. Anybody anywhere in our state could dial 1-800-QUIT-NOW. You'll get a live counselor who will help you every step of the way. And we'll mail to you 2 weeks of free nicotine medicine, either the patch, the gum, or the lozenges. And it'll go to your home. You don't need a prescription. You don't need to pay for it. All of this is free services. We also have text-based programs to help you quit if you want to quit online. Smokegov is the web link to those text-based and other sources to help you to quit. So it's a great time to quit. The last thing I want to just emphasize is talk to your doctor, because medications do help. This is a powerful addiction, and you shouldn't feel you have to do it on your own just with willpower. Most people have been smoking for many years. Using the medicines for a couple months will markedly increase your likelihood of successfully quitting. So get a prescription for one of the medicines. Health plans have to pay for these prescriptions, and it'll help you to quit successfully. In Medicaid in the state of Wisconsin covers all of the medicines, including over-the-counter medicines, if your doctor provides you with a prescription. It's a great time to quit. Do it now.
And Dr. Fiore, your phone line cut out just as you said the online resource for that text line. Could you repeat that?
The online resource for the text program is smokefree.gov. There is also a text resource as part of the Wisconsin Tobacco Quit Line.
Let's bring on a caller. Go ahead. I'm sorry. The quit line again.
1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Let's bring on a caller. Joseph is with us in Madison. Joseph, hi.
Hi. Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to chime in with a real voice of I started smoking. I think I was about 16, 17. And I did finally quit, but I just wanted to agree with what has been mentioned on the show that took me multiple tries. For me, what worked best was the patch. I tried some lozenger. So I think just knowing that if it's something you want to do, like don't give up and don't get down on yourself, just keep giving it a try and see what works best for you to quit.
Joseph, thanks a lot for that call. A great message. And Dr. Fiore, what Joseph did, you know, one method that might work for some people didn't happen to work for him. The idea of that second, that third try, maybe trying a different approach.
Absolutely. And Joseph, I just want to take a minute and commend you for doing it and telling your story, because it's so motivating to others. Keep on trying. And you're right. You know, if the gum or the lozenge doesn't help, the patch is a very effective nicotine medicine. And again, you could get 2 weeks of it free by calling 1-800-QUIT-NOW, the Wisconsin Tobacco Quit Line. It's a great time to quit.
Thanks again for that call. And Dr. Fiore, thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Dr. Michael Fiore, professor of medicine and founder and director of the Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention at the University of Wisconsin. He talked to us about the jump in underage tobacco sales in a recent test here in Wisconsin. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. For a lot of people, part of the joy of traveling is the opportunity to try lots of new and interesting foods you'd never come across back home. But then you do get back home and you're a little disappointed because you can't find those same great foods around here. It's Food Friday. Today, we're going to travel across Europe from the comfort of our own kitchens and bring tastes of France, Italy, Germany, and more right back to our dinner tables. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite European dish you'd like to make? Maybe something that you encountered if you've traveled to Europe, or maybe something that comes from your family, if that's where your heritage lies, or you ran into it at a restaurant. Is this stuff you would make at home? Join in at 800-642-1234. Oh, and do you have that magical food that you had and it was awesome there and you just wish you could make it at home or find it at home? Join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. James Shend is a Wisconsin-based food writer, former culinary deputy editor at Taste of Home. He spent a few months dining across Europe earlier this year. He's here to help us recreate some of the best things he tried. James, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate it.
Now, I don't know if you, as a longtime food writer and editor, when you travel, do you build some of your travel plans on, I want to try the food there?
Some of my travels? No, all of them.
Yeah. So this, you went on this trip across Europe. What were some of the things on your itinerary? Like, I got to go there to try this.
Well, the crux of the trip was all to visit all of the foreign exchange students that I had hosted over the years.
Oh.
So they just naturally hit all the great food areas. So it was just so much fun. Like I stepped off the plane in Naples, and the first thing we did, we left the airport and immediately went to get some Neapolitan pizza. And it was just outstanding. I'm like, unbelievable how good the pizza is there and how simple it is. It's just incredible.
Let's stay in Naples for a minute. What there's an argument that Naples is the birthplace, I think, of pizza. And it's a little different than maybe what we might encounter here. What was special about some of the pizza you had in Naples?
Well, I think it comes down to the crust. And I'm not sure what they do, because I watched them. I talked to a number of chefs. And I think the ingredients they have there is just something so special compared to what we have here. And it's just very light. It's very airy. And they throw it into basically what it tones to a blast furnace. That oven is so hot. It's between like 900 and 1100 degrees. So those pizzas cook in a couple of minutes, if less than that. But what really astounded me is the, I've heard of Neapolitan pizza before, but they have something that is even more iconic to that area. And it's basically a deep fried pizza. And they make their dough as usual and then deep fry it. And then they top it and serve it. And it's called pizza fritta. And it's everywhere. It's a classic street food that a lot of restaurants there are starting to put into their restaurants. But it's very simple and it's oh so good.
I'm intrigued by this. I do not have a deep fryer at home, and I don't have a pot big enough, I don't think, for a good sized pizza crust. Could we, do you think we could get something like that by, you know, pan frying a pizza crust, but really on a high heat?
Oh yeah. I've tried it since I got back home, and I used it just a deep cast iron skillet and just some regular pizza dough. I bought it at a local store. I didn't even make my own, and it turned out beautifully. It was a little more chewier than what I had over there, but I mean, the result was just outstanding.
All right, if I want to really recreate that Naples experience, I fry up my pizza dough. What am I putting on top of it?
So the one I had, it was very, very simple. They just topped it with a fresh tomato sauce, a few sprigs of basil, and then just a very, very light sprinkling of parm. And that was it. It was very simple, but very, very good.
Now, I understand you ate some foods that I might not want to recreate here at home. In Austria, you had lung soup, which is what it sounds like, soup with lung. Now, I respect that. Like, there's, you know, there's a sense that you want to use all of the animal, right? So why not eat the lung? I'm probably not going to do it. What was the experience like?
Well, I was surprised. And because like early on in my trip, I learned, don't ask what things are. Just eat it and then we'll ask later. And so that was the experience here. They served this soup and I just ate it. And then I asked what it was. And it was sheep's lung. And the texture was very much like a very well-cooked chicken breast, but the color was very gray. It was not an appetizing-looking soup, but the flavor was very good. I enjoyed it. I would have ordered it again.
Now, that's a great sense of adventure. You'll eat the food. You're not sure what it is. I'd probably be a little more timid than that. What would you say to encourage us to leap before we look and try that new and different food?
I know that is a hard thing to get over. I mean, like, it's ingrained when you're a little kid and it kind of just continues on. But to me, it was just like, you've got to suspend it. You've got to try it. And I just kept thinking, thousands of people have eaten these for many, many years. And I'm just like, it's got to be good or people wouldn't have done it. So I just keep going. And I'm like, there are things certainly that I did not like and didn't care for. I'm not a big sea urchin fan. Found that one out. When I was in Paris, escargot, just not my favorite thing. It's just a very chewy thing. But I mean, I think most people go for the garlic butter that they're cooked in. So I'm like, well, it's kind of a trade-off.
Now, apart maybe from that Neapolitan fried pizza, what were some of your other favorite things that you encountered and maybe thought, gosh, it'd be nice to have that at home?
Oh, one of my favorites. I was in Paris and we had something called duck confit. And it's a very classic old dish that was just basically used to preserve the duck. And it was duck legs that had been salted and brined, and then they're cooked very, very slowly by submerging them in duck fat. And then they just pull it off the heat and let it congeal. And then later on, they just pull the duck leg out, fry it, and serve it with potatoes. It is truly one of the best things I've ever eaten in my entire life.
Is that something you've seen, anything like that here in the Midwest? I guess if you go to a French restaurant?
I've seen it at a few French restaurants in Milwaukee and in Madison, and especially in Chicago. I've seen it down there as well. But it's not a very common dish because it does take a lot of duck fat to do. And I think it just kind of turns a lot of people off at how much fat it needs. But I mean, it is so, so good. So I'm trying to like recreate that here. And I had one experiment with chicken legs. That was okay. It wasn't bad. But there's just something about duck that is just exceptional.
Yeah, do you have any rules or methods for when you try something, maybe at a restaurant in another country or even another state where there's a different food tradition, and you try to reverse engineer it and make it on your own? Any tips for people who are trying to do that?
Yeah, I mean, the best advice I ever got was go ahead and ask the chef. And like a lot of times they'll be flattered and they will give you the recipe. I haven't found too many that are like,
really?
Nope, that's a secret. They'll give it to you because it's just like they know 9 times out of 10, you're never going to try to make that thing. But they're flattered. And so that is my first go-to is just ask because they'll hand it to you most of the time. And otherwise, it's just like, all right, you kind of take note of what the texture was, what the flavor was, what it looked like. And then you can kind of have Google as your friend, and then you start looking. Because there's like so many images of these foods online that you're like, okay, that looks closer to what I had than that photo. So I'm going to go in that direction and then kind of go from there.
Talking to James Shend on Food Friday. James is a Wisconsin-based food writer, used to be with Taste of Home. We are getting some inspiration from a culinary tour of Europe that he took. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If there is a favorite European food you've had while traveling there or at a restaurant here, or maybe something your grandparents used to make, join in at 800-642-1234. Or if you have more or less successfully reverse engineered a restaurant meal you've had somewhere, love to hear that success story. 800-642-1234. All right, James, let's get back on your trail here. You were in Norway and you had some Norwegian potato dumplings called, I don't know, is it club or klub? How do we say that? And what are they?
I think it's called klub. And I think it is a holdover from very Norwegian, almost probably like Viking age things. But I can't say that because they didn't have potatoes.
They didn't have potatoes yet. Yep.
But you take mashed potatoes and then basically you just add a little bit of egg to them, some flour, and then you form them into a ball and then shove. The one I had reindeer sausage that they put inside it, enclosed it. Then they boiled it in, oddly enough, a reindeer stock that they had made from the bones. And they just let it simmer for about, I think it was about 45 minutes to an hour. And then some of them served it with butter and sugar. Others used honey. Others just liked it plain right out of the stock. But it is I would very much call this a hearty winter dish. There's nothing light about this thing at all. I mean, it was tasty, but it was not a delicate, like fluffy kind of food.
And now reindeer sausage isn't always easy to come by here, I don't think. But have you tried making something like this klub here at home?
Oh, yeah. And like what the person that was making this for me, she's like, whatever meat I have, I'll use. And it's like, so sometimes she uses ham, sometimes bacon, roasted pork, things like that. It's like whatever she had on hand. But she knew I was this food person and was like, I'm going to try the reindeer sausage. But then she also made a sheep soup, which had a lot of root vegetables. So there was like turnips and parsnips and things like that. And then 3 different kinds of sheep in there. One was just fresh, like a fresh roast. And then one was a dried sausage. And then there was one other one I'm not really quite sure I could have identified that.
Let's bring on a caller. Christina is with us in Glenwood. Christina, hi.
Hi there. Thank you. I have 2 comments. I have a chicken gizzard recipe that is a confit with duck fat, and you can cut that with a fork. It is so delicious, braised in that duck fat. And then the other thing is regarding trying new or unusual foods, I always do blind taste tests, and it seems like people are more receptive to trying new things and discovering that they actually like them versus looking at it first.
And they obviously trust you, Christina.
Yeah, yes, including my 5-year-old niece. She'll try anything now.
I love it. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. James, do you want to leave us with some more inspiration along Christina's lines of bringing new foods to ourselves and others?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love to try things. And it's like, that is my profession. I understand I'm kind of more open to things like that. But like what Christine said, it's just like, you've got to trust people and try them. Don't ask what they are. And you'll find there's a lot of things you really do enjoy. And so I just was like, go with it. Go with an open mind. Try things. Because a lot of these old time dishes that I'm seeing over in Europe, they're starting to make their way back over here again. Mm. And they're just phenomenal.
Thanks for that call. And James, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
That's James Shend, a Wisconsin-based food writer, former culinary deputy editor at Taste of Home. He's with us on Food Friday to share some inspiration from foods around Europe.